Good morning. This is the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, which meets every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at this time on this frequency for the purpose of discussing old radio and many other topics. You do not have to be a member of the AWA to join our net. All are welcome to join in. We're going to start this morning with the one call letter area. Any stations in the one call letter area wishing to check in, WA3DSP. Okay, nothing heard. How about the two-call letter area this morning? The two-call letter area for the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP.
WA2DGB, good morning, Doug.
AB2RA.
WF1L, a little late.
AB2RA.
Okay, good morning to Bill, Pocono Bill, W2DGB, and Janice, AB2RA, and Dover Bill, WF1L. How about the three-call letter area this morning, WA3DSP?
WA3VEE, WA3 Victor Echo Echo.
WA3YNW.
Whiskey 3, Juliet Whiskey.
WA3KLR.
Okay, good morning to WA3VEE, Victor Echo Echo. WA3YNW, Mount Vernonville. W3JW, Jeff. And Tom, WA3KLR. And WA3VEE, what is your name and location?
Yeah, Roger. Good morning, Doug. Nice call sign, by the way. Love it. Digital signal processing. Name here is Ron, Romeo Oscar November, and the location is Westchester, Pennsylvania, about 12 miles east of W3GMS. Back to you.
Okay, very good, Ron. Yeah, my call is was issued in 1965. It's not a vanity call. And, of course, when it was issued, we didn't really have very much or any knowledge of digital signal processing. So it was a fluke that I got that call. All right, let's go to the four-call letter area this morning, WA3DSP. Okay, nothing heard. How about any call letter area? Anyone that we missed? WA3DSP.
November X-ray 3 is Zulu.
Okay, November X-ray 3 Zulu, WA3DSP. Good morning to you. What is your name and location?
Yeah, this is Jim in Phoenix, Maryland.
Oh, hi, Jim. Good to hear you. Good signal this morning. The band seems to be in pretty good shape, and everybody's coming in quite well. Very happy New Year to everyone this morning, and looks like we're going to have kind of a rainy but quite warm New Year. It's currently 47 degrees here in Richboro, 50 degrees down in Cape May, and I guess it's going to be in the 60s tomorrow, so before we get cold again. It's been quite a mild winter here, and if anybody's been watching the weather nationally or even internationally, you can see that there's some pretty weird things going on. Massive snows and record all-time low temperatures in the northwest, and us having all these mild temperatures. Things are kind of flip-flop this year. I am recording the net today, so that's going to be, I'll put that out on my webpage later on. I do that every once in a while, but I thought today would be a good day to do that. And Bill, W2DGB, I was looking for email from you. I don't know if you got my emails. KD2HT, Steve, who's a neighbor of yours, happened to come by here to pick up some equipment that I was giving away, and he mentioned that he was lived very close to you, and I asked him if he would bring up the 75A1, and he said he would. So he took it when he picked up the equipment. I guess it was on Wednesday of this week. So I don't know if he's gotten a hold of you, but I did email you right away, and I haven't heard any response. So maybe you're not getting my emails. I'm not sure. And let's see, I did finally wrap up the SP600 restoration, and that is now in the rack with my 51J, my R388, and my HQ120, all rack mounted in nicely in the rack, and I am putting together a patch panel to patch speakers and antennas for that rack, and that'll be some of my my receivers that I'm going to keep, but I am also getting rid of a lot of equipment. I'm going to be putting up the Mohawk, Apache, and SB10 for sale today. I had mentioned that in an earlier email to everyone if anybody was interested in the AWA group, and I didn't get any responses. So I'll be doing that, and my next group is the SX-101 and SX-101A and the HT-32 combination. I want to sell that also, so if anybody's interested, please let me know. All right, we'll start this morning with Bill, W2DGB, and Bill, you pass it to Janice, AB2RA, to Dover Bill, WF1L, to Ron, WA3, Victor Echo Echo. And Ron, you pass it to Mount Vernon Bill, WA3YNW, to Jeff, W3JW, to Tom, WA3KLR, and finally to Jim, NX3Z. W2DGB and the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP.
Okay, very good, Doug. WA3DSP and the group. Boy, you got a good group here this morning. W2DGB. And before I forget it, Happy New Year to everyone. And may you have a good year and not catch any of this COVID thing. I understand the new variant. It's pretty, what do you call it? Anyway, it's very, I can't get the words now. Since I'm nearly 94 years old, that's to be expected. Anyway, contagious is the word I want. Very, very contagious. And masks do not seem to help it a lot. So maybe we should start wearing two masks. Weather-wise, we have 48 degrees here now, confirming your statement, Doug, that it's warm, 90% humidity. And I have a new clock here in the ham shack, and it's a Marathon digital clock, which is tied in with WWV somehow. At any rate, I got it sitting up on top of my books on top of the transceiver. And boy, it's really a great clock. I have 9:39 and 13 seconds right now. Okay, let's see here. What else? Doug, I did not see your email, but I must have missed it. You have my email address, so I'm going to go back and check it after the net. And Steve, who lives about 8 miles from me, he'll be over sometime and drop it off. And I'll get somebody to haul it upstairs to the place where I work and on the second floor. Probably my son if he's here. At any rate, that's very good. We're Janice, good to hear you. AB2RA, W2DGB.
Okay, well, good to hear everybody. Normally I've tried to be in attendance here on Fridays, even though I usually miss the other days of the week. It just seems as if Friday works out the best for me. But no particular schedule in my case. Don and I are both retired, and it's just the way it seems to work out around the weather and shopping trips and doctor visits. Hopefully not too many of them for a while. I recently acquired an FTDX 101D, which is what I'm using right now, and Santa Claus was very good to me this Christmas, aka Don, but I've been a very good girl, so I've been told. I'm enjoying it, but there's an awful lot to absorb about it. I haven't characterized its AM performance yet. I like to be able to use a race box on AM because I can scan the watering hole frequencies and if need be jump on if I hear somebody I want to say hi to while I'm at the workbench. New Year's Eve, straight key night. I'm hoping to get a DX20 and an HQ100 set up. There's sort of a guest operating equipment spot that I put smaller rigs from time to time. And so I have to configure them when I drop them in there, but the shack is kind of ripped apart because of the new acquisition and getting everything back to normal. So that's it for the first round, WF1L. This is AB2RA. Over.
Yeah. Happy New Year, Janet, and to everybody else in the Bruce Kelly Memorial Net. Here is Whiskey Foxtrot 1 Lima, Bill over in Dover, where it's currently 51 and a half degrees, 93% humidity, so kind of a squishy day. And looks like we're going to have more of that for the rest of the weekend until it gets cold, then we may end up with a little bit of slushy snow as early as Sunday night, so not looking forward to that, really. So there we have. In any case, I'm going to try and get on straight key night tonight, even with my abysmal CW skills, which means next to none, and at least trying to make one contact if somebody will send slow enough for me. So there you have it. And that's not too much else going on exciting. I've been working on trying to get the shack ready for the January VHF. Contest. Got another desk mic from a friend over in New Jersey who was selling it out of his father's estate. And so now I've got at least differing mic phones with different colored windscreens on them, so I know which one is connected to which radio. So that'll help me in a moment of stress. So there we have that. So I'm just are going to work. There's been a lot of squawk about using FT8 and not using single sideband and CW in the VHF contest. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. Not looking forward to an awful lot of other things. It's been quiet, and I'm hoping that the COVID doesn't get too bad to the point where they're going to cancel the Orlando Ham Fest. I'm looking forward to going on that, down there in February. So we'll see how that plays out as well. So with that, I will pass it on to the next guy in line whose call sign totally escapes me, but you know who you are. So this is WF1L, passing it on to the next three guy.
Oh, very good, Bill. This is Ron, WA3VEE, up Route 1 and up Route 202 from you here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So WF1L, WA3VEE to make it official. And all very, very good. It's great to hear everybody. Bill, I'm very sorry I missed your net on 9:30 on Wednesday. We had my wife Deb and I had our brother-in-law Dennis come up, and he's never been here to the house. He only lives down about an hour south of us in Northeast Maryland, but he's never been up here to the house. So it was a very special day, and unfortunately I missed the net, and so my apologies there. I'm using the 7610 right now here because the Kenwood TS-830 is in fine shape, but it's on my bench, my electronics bench in my lab for testing and eval. So, Bill, I'll be sending some pics and an email over on that in the next day or two, so you can watch for that. I will be running frequency and spectrum analysis on it, looking for harmonics and looking for purity and all that kind of good stuff. And it's all stuff in preparation for when we, Joe and I, come to visit you in February when we pick up the microphone. So all very, very good. And on, I'll send you a couple, an email on a couple other topics as well. And at the same time, kind of time sharing here and multitasking, which I don't do very well at. I'm working on the update for the Clipperton L, and that is a little involved. Certainly able to follow it, but it takes a little bit. I was telling Joe it takes GMS, it takes a little bit of concentration because the wiring colors in the instructions are very different from the ones in the actual amplifier themselves. So you have to make sure that you're putting things in the right place and all that. Have the board fabricated. I will send a photo of that. That turned out very nicely. And we'll get that underway here in the next couple weeks or so. But that's the second thing down on my list. I really want to get the 830 checked out. And I'll be shifting my attention more to the vintage part of my shack here as well. I've got some older transceivers here, so very interested in getting that part resolved. So won't hold it very long here. This will be one and done, as I've got to get busy with some things, as always, over here. A lot of what we call domestic tranquility jobs to do. Everybody sounds pretty good. Bill, WF1L, your signal is the weakest, but I got you on the SDR up here on FEF, so I copied everything that you said. I'd like to say a very healthy and happy new year to all, and I'll be passing it over to Mount Vernon Bill, WA3YNW, WA3VEE. It's all yours, Bill.
Okay, Ron, thank you. WA3DEE from WA3YNW. Yeah, I like that call. It would sound good on CW. Okie doke. Well, good morning to you and everyone on the net. We're sitting at 52 degrees right now, kind of cloudy and overcast, and was somewhat foggy earlier this morning. But that is kind of more or less cleared off right now, so it's just cloudy and overcast. And I think tomorrow and Sunday are going to be two wet days. So I don't really have anything planned. In fact, I don't even have anything planned for today. As far as projects going on, I don't have anything going, and I doubt if I probably will now, as far as radio is concerned. Just, the main aim is to just keep going what I've got going here, and that's about it. Let's see. I might go into the shop later on today and pedal right on the car a little bit. I don't know yet. Or am I going to just try straighten up some from past activities? Other than that, really don't have too much more to add, and just want to wish everyone a very happy and prosperous New Year coming up. And let's hope 2022 is better than 2021 in a lot of ways. So over to Jeff and the cloudy south. W3JW and the net, WA3YNW.
Okie doke. Very good, Bill. WA3YNW. and the AWA net. This is W3JW. Yeah, you got that right. It is definitely not the sunny south here today. As a matter of fact, we're in a miniature fog bank that seems to be breaking up and clearing off, but it's been very gloomy here for the last 36 hours or so. Not much rain, although we got a couple of tenths of an inch the other day. Where the state, a good fraction of the southern tier of the state of Virginia is in a state of drought at the moment, as a matter of fact. Not a severe one, but it's much drier than normal around here. So I guess we can use some of this precipitation coming up. Anyway, Doug, we wanted to get in here and wish everyone a very happy new year coming up. Having completed our assigned rounds in 2021, this is the last net for 21. We'll look forward to a whole bunch of good ones coming up in 22. Sounds like a number of good projects are on the benches around the circuit here, and that's always good news. And we're going to head over to the fitness center, so I'll listen out here for a few minutes, but this will be our only transmission today. Everybody have a good and safe holiday coming up. Tom, up she comes to you. WA3KLR in the group. W3JW.
Okay, Jeff. W3JW in the AWA net from WA3KLR. Well, before you run off, Jeff, Happy New Year to you and everyone else. Yeah, we're having a very foggy, dismal morning here. And the unusual thing for a winter day is there's only 1 degree of temperature change from the low this morning till now. It's 48 degrees. Well, I mentioned Monday I'd touch on the World War II bomber, light bomber, the British bomber, the de Havilland Mosquito. I had heard the name, but didn't know anything about it. And the reason I want to touch on it has to do with HF radio and the aircraft. And what inspired this is my January-February 2022 issue of Popular Mechanics has a small article on some New Zealand group that actually, it wasn't just a restoration. They practically had to rebuild the whole Mosquito. It's a wooden aircraft. Believe it or not, I knew the Hawker Hurricane, you know, was wood and canvas, but this is pretty much all wood bomber, just two guys in it, and the fuselage was a half inch thick balsa wood with a 16th of an inch birch plywood on either side of that, and that's how they did the fuselage. And they obviously wanted a very light aircraft, so it would be very, very fast. It's got two Merlin V-12 engines. So it would get up to, I think, a little over 420 miles an hour. So it was tough for any German fighter to catch them. Anyhow, and there's a picture there of the inside of the fuselage on one side. And with all these control cables, hydraulic tubings, electrical cables running there. Since it's all wood, they had to carry their own ground, and they had cop 20,000ths of an inch thick copper cut into strips. They didn't say how wide, but from the photo, it looks like 1 inch wide. And I was guessing they'd maybe use 2 inch wide strips, but it looks like 1 inch. And they, of course, they had a HF radio in there. I can see in the, of course, they're going way out of VHF range of England when they fly to Germany. Like most World War II fighters, there's a mast up behind the cockpit and a wire running to the high up on the vertical stabilizer on the leading edge. And when you have a metal aircraft and you have those antennas. People probably thought that's an antenna radiating against ground, which is the body of a metal aircraft. But what you're doing there really is exciting the whole airframe, and that wire going up is consider of a gamma match or something like that. It's just hopefully that wire and the HF frequency range you're interested in presents an impedance that's no worse than a few ohms and no higher than a, like say 500 ohms, so that you can come up with a practical antenna tuner when the voltages aren't too high. And today's modern all-metal aircraft, they usually pick a section, I think, of the vertical stabilizer, and it's isolated, and they drive that. But so what I'm wondering is, you know, the only thing for that wire to work with is, you know, that cabling running through the aircraft. And what they did mention was they had trouble with static on the radio, so probably, you know, they had to learn this. They built the prototype, and probably a lot of those tubings and cables and everything are jostling against each other. And so you can, I can see in the one photo that they bonded a lot of that stuff together, clamped it in some copper bars, and then they had all this grounding, and you know, of course, had to have ground return wires. And so it just made me start thinking about how that worked. Of course, the I didn't figure it out. The wire going from the mast to the rear would probably be 25 foot or so. I looked up the dimensions of the aircraft, and I didn't think to scale this out, try to guess the length of this wire. But I think, Doug, you gave me a hardware fitting one time that was from for the aircraft to fit that wire, hold that wire. And so it's an interesting thing. What I was thinking was it would be more drag and I guess dangerous if the wire broke, but if you ran a wire off the each wingtip and back to the tail, you could form a V antenna and drive that. And I figured those wires, I did a scale analysis for that. I think they could come up with about 32 foot of wire on each side of the V if you wanted to. So they, unfortunately, they didn't say anything about the about what the HF radio was. I'll have to look that up on the web, see if there's any mention of what the HF radio was in a De Havilland Mosquito. But they made about, I forget, doesn't say in the article, 6,700 or 7,600 of these things. And the neat thing about them being made of wood, they were you could farm out a lot of work to various shops. And they found a really bad, of course, since they're made of wood, a really decrepit De Havilland in Canada, cut it apart and shipped it back to New Zealand for study. So I guess that's enough on that. Down to Jim, NX3Z from WA3KLR.
Okay, very good, Tom. WA3KLR, this is NX3Z. And good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year. And very interesting hearing about the aircraft stuff and the radios. Running a KWM-2A here and a 30L1 linear into a 160 full-wave loop out in the backyard. And not much to report here. It's 47 degrees here in Phoenix, Maryland, which is located about 10 miles north of the Baltimore city line, and just due north of the city. And I've been working on my basement shack here. I've got a big bench and a lot of stuff here that always something needs to be tweaked. And I'm a new member of AWA, so just getting my feet on the ground with that. There's as I look around web pages and whatnot, looking off of Doug's page there, some of the stuff is certainly a rich list of things to look at. So I'm going to try to get on the straight key. Well, they say it's not a contest. Straight key night tonight at some point or tomorrow. I think it runs for 24 hours. And I've got an, also as some... was it Janice, I think is the name? I don't think I have that right, but the DX20. I'm not sure which receiver I'll use with it, but I'm going to try to get that DX20 going. And so that's it from Phoenix, and enjoyed hearing everybody this morning. And so let me turn it back. I'm at the tail end Charlie here. Let me turn it back up to Doug, WA3DSP. This is NX3Z.
NX3Z and the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP. Very good, everyone, on that go-around. Nice signals this morning. I copy everybody real fine here. And I was just looking up the Havilland Mosquito. On Wikipedia, there's a tremendous amount of information there. And a lot of references, and one of the references I was just looking for here was a reference to the radios, and I didn't get a chance to look at that, but tremendous amount of information on the aircraft, and it looks like they were made in Canada and Australia, and it lists the models and how many were made and so forth, so... somebody's really put a lot of time into the Wikipedia article on that aircraft and the variations of it that were built. So I'll have to read up on that a little bit. And interesting about the antennas. A lot of the aircraft used trailing wire antennas that were quite long. In more modern times, you know, that were on VLF frequencies, and they could actually reel it out to thousands of feet and in an emergency cut it off if necessary and just drop it. We had aircraft at the Naval Air Development Center that were able to do that. And a lot of that was used for sonobuoy work that was done there, and also high-power VLF frequencies. The B-52, not the B-52, the KC-135, some were outfitted with high-power VLF transmitters that used trailing wire antennas. Let's see, 73 to Jeff, and also to Ron, WA3VEE. Everybody have a very happy new year and stay safe, and we're going to be staying close to home here for our New Year's, not doing anything special. We usually go down to Cape May this time of year, but decided not to, mainly because of the weather. It's not going to be very nice weather this year. It's certainly going to be warm, but it's going to be very rainy, so we decided not to go down. And I mentioned earlier I was working on the SP-600, and I really lucked out on that. My SP-600, when I opened it up, was a more modern version of it. They made that radio from about 1951 to about 1971, almost a 20-year span. And mine was probably, although I couldn't date it, there was no markings on it at all to date it. I would guess it was probably closer to 1960, about midway through. and had more modern capacitors in it. It had a lot of disc ceramic bypasses and not the Bumblebee or the other capacitors that were a problem in the earlier models. So I did do a lot of changes in it, but nothing that required a massive amount of capacitor replacement. And I'm going to write that up and put it out on the internet. Turns out that I was kind of surprised. I really was very surprised about the performance of the SP600 compared to my 51J and my R388. I thought the Collins radios would be better as far as band spread and being able to copy sideband and tune it. And although you can tune sideband with the Collins radios, of course that's using you know, just a BFO, not a product detector. The SP600 is really a breeze to tune sideband, and it's very stable. In fact, I think it's more stable than the Collins radios were, and which is very surprising because of you know, the Collins have the PTO in them, and although they are stable, the SP600 seems to have them beat in a lot of respects. It's quite a heavy receiver. I didn't weigh it, but I would expect it's probably close to 80 pounds or more. A lot of iron in there, and very rugged receiver. It's made to operate for long periods of time. You know, in situations where it needs to be reliable, and I would say that that's true. They really did engineer that well. The power transformer gets lukewarm after being run for many hours, so there's no problem there with overheating or of any kind in that receiver. So I think my next project might be DX100. I'm going to rearrange my shack quite a bit, and as I said, I am getting rid of a lot of equipment that I know I'll never use or never update, and most of it is the real heavy stuff that I want to get rid of, like the Apache and the HT32 and SX101 receiver. But I'm keeping some things for sure, so not totally eliminating the shack here. All right, I'll stand by for any late check-ins, and we'll start the second round. Any other check-ins for the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP. Okay, nothing heard. And Bill, DGB, I hope you found those emails. I sent a couple of emails. The first one I sent was that I was moving the receiver out to the carriage shed. And then this gentleman came the next day, and it just worked out very well that it was out there, and all the other equipment that I was giving to him was out there, and we just loaded it into his car, and he probably will be in touch with you about it. So hopefully you can get that real soon. So we'll start the second round with Bill, W2DGB. To Janice, AB2RA, to Dover Bill, WF1L, and this time, Bill, you pass it to Mount Vernon Bill, WA3YNW, and Mount Vernon Bill, you pass it this time to Tom, WA3KLR, and finally, NX3Z, Jim. And Jim, good to hear you in here, and welcome to the Antique Wireless Association. I'm sure you'll enjoy our nets and a lot of the activities. W2DGB and the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP.
Okay, Doug, thank you. WA3DSP and the group W2DGB. And I echo that comment, Jim. You've been in here before, but welcome again. Good to hear you. You have a nice signal, and obviously you're an active radio ham. Sounds very good. Good to hear your comments. Let's see here. Doug, I have not heard from Steve, KD3HT, about the 75A1, but he'll get in touch with me sooner or later. And if I can find his phone number, I'll give him a call. Let's see. Tom, when talking about the Mosquito aircraft, that's a lot of information. So I was, when you, your turn comes, give me that particular URL that you were, had all those pictures of this aircraft, because I want to look that up. But of course, I want to look up Wikipedia also, which Doug mentioned. There's a lot of information there. That was a very remarkable aircraft. And the Brits, in England, they were very good on woodworking. So, as I understand it, they built the primary model there. But that was a light aircraft with two very, very high performance engines. So at any rate, I'll look that up. I've known about that aircraft for years and years, but I haven't thought about it in recent years. Let's see here, what else is new and exciting? Working on the HRO, trying to get the, I don't have much horizontal space for it, but I think I'll put the coil rack up on top of the BC-348, two shelves up. So that coil rack is 6 inches, 5 plus 1. So it takes a lot of space. But it's nice to look at the coils in that rack. So it's a very good looking rig. So at any rate, I think that's about it for now. So we'll pass it on to AB2RA, Janice, of the Don and Janice Show. I assume that you're still there, AB2RA. So take it away, W2DGB.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Don part of the show won't be here today. I'm doing it solo. He's upstairs doing World of Warcraft. And I'm just playing with the functions on this new FTDX 101 and familiarizing myself with it. And I'm looking at the K3FEF, and the pattern looks pretty pretty clean and tight. There are some you put an amplifier in the mix, and the distortion is down per spec, but it's not it's not zero, so a little bit shows up, but it doesn't look too bad. NX3Z, apparently you're running a DX20 for straight key night also. And it's a good little rig. It follows the philosophy of how much can you take out of the circuitry and still have a functioning radio. And it's pretty decent. I would rate it a notch above the Johnson Adventurer. The power level is roughly the same, but the oscillator circuitry and the Heathkit is better, and there is an extra capacitor to prevent you from inadvertently tuning up on 40 meters when you're trying to operate on 80 meters. And Doug, I'm glad you're happy with the Hammerlin Super Pro. I've always held it in high regard. I had one at one point that passed through my hands, and I had to part with it. Had some financial setbacks and lost most of my equipment on a couple of occasions. The one I had was performed particularly well, and of course I loved it for AM and shortwave listening, but I don't do hardly any shortwave listening at all anymore because there's simply nothing of interest worth listening to. There's a lot of Spanish language, which I don't speak. There's a lot of Bible blasters and the old powerhouses like the BBC and Deutsche Welle, which always had interesting programming, are a thing of the past. I always enjoyed Radio Australia, and that's gone as well. The SP-600 was, of course, widely used by the military and three-letter agencies, and it was built to last. And those bumblebee capacitors were a real project to get all of them. Some of them were located inside the IF cans, which I found to my embarrassment. I had been listening to Radio Australia, and I went out to the postal box, rural postal box in front of my house, to get the mail, and I came back and there was smoke in the house, and I immediately ran into the radio room and turned it off. It turns out there was a 1K resistor in series with a B+, and that saved any real damage, but boy, the radio stunk like burnt resistor for a long time. And Doug, the Apache is a pretty decent transmitter. My big issue with it was the use of the 6CA7s in the modulator. There were always arcs underneath the chassis between the plate and screen pins on those. They were running the plates at 700 volts, something which only Sylvania specified those tubes for that voltage. And even if you replaced them with ceramic sockets, you had to paint the whole thing up with high voltage Gliptol paint. And I even installed very short little shrink sleeve leggings on the tube pins themselves, just enough to cover the space between where it came out of the tube and went into the connector, because it would sometimes arc on top of the socket. I have seen people replace those with 6146s, and it worked out quite well. I had one Apache, was badly assembled, and I wound up going back over everything with flux and re-soldering everything before it became reliable. Anyway, second round, on to WF1L. This is AB2RA.
AB2RA, the lovely Janet, and the rest of the Bruce Kelly Memorial Net. This is WF1L, And Janice, I just wanted to let you know we are using our 8-band equalizer on the audio on this on the rig now. I got it back from Julius, and it seems to be working quite well, and I'm real happy with it. And I've gotten some very nice reports on the audio, so that is a big plus for my station. And we're sitting here trying to figure out how to get build a shelf so we can restack the equipment here and gain a little more real estate of shelf space. We have a problem with that, just like Bill does with his HRO. I want to move the 1296 station from over here on the HF side of the room over to the rest, over with the rest of its brethren on the VHF, UHF table, and don't have a place to put it. So I've got to come up with a new shelf to give it some real estate to sit on, and that way I'll have all of that stuff beyond it, beyond 6 meters, all together in one spot, so they can just sit there and gurgle and bubble and do their own thing over there, while the HF station over here is just sort of chucking along here. So anyhow, it also gets the radio over closer to where the antenna rotor control is for the VHF UHF station, being they're all stacked on one common shaft. So that way it'll be easier to look for people in the contest. So I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to do this before the 18th of January, which is when the contest is. So there we go. And I have got the 1296 station working again. Probably cockpit error more than anything. Everything's working fine, and been very, very pleased with it. It seems to work nicely. Even though I can only talk to a couple of people with it on occasion, I have been able to get up to Philadelphia and over into Maryland and over to Ray Golly over in New Jersey. So it does work, and it transmits and receives, which I'm very happy about. So I just wish I could have maybe some more horsepower on there. 50 watts doesn't seem to be able to do an awful lot, and would like to be able to have a reliable signal up above Philadelphia, like up into the Poconos or over to W2DGB. I know he doesn't listen to 1296, but it'd be nice to have be able to get up to his neighborhood or over to Connecticut and Long Island. So that's where a bunch of people are that in the VHF, UHF family that will do contesting in January. So there we go. Anyway, we keep struggling along. I am in the process of purchasing an ICOM 706 Mark IIG. Ran across that in an email from a friend from back in Virginia. He's got one for a very reasonable price, and it has all the nice accessories that come with it, the separation kits, the mountings, and what have you. So I'm going to probably end up buying, I've already committed to buying it, and I'll probably use it to supplement the 817, which is now my IF rig on my 222 station. So it'll go in there, and the 817 will be going back into the grab and go bag where it really belongs. So so we'll see how that plays out too. But anyhow, that's about the extent of it. And I'm sitting here thinking about anything else I need to tell anybody other than a very happy, safe New Year wishes to all. This is WF1L, and we're going to pass it over to Tom, or no, to our brother Bill down further down the peninsula. WA3YNW to take it, WF1L.
Okay, Bill, real fine. WF1L in the net, WA3YNW. Well, I will say one thing. It's been a very interesting net this morning, hearing all the different stories and accounts of what's going on in the past. Yeah, Tom, the mosquito plane you were talking about, there's one on the internet. I saw it. I didn't look at it. but it's on a website called Timeline. And they have some real good things on World War II on different sides of the war, the Germans, the British, the England, and all of them. So very, very interested on some of that. And they have another one that's called Factories at War, which is very, very good too. And I watch that, some of that class quite a bit. And it tells also about the demise of the U-boat, how the Allies threw hopped up and radar, sonar, and some of the other things. Of course, the aircraft carrier put an end to them real quick. So anyway, straight key night. I won't try to maybe get on, maybe nothing else. I'll just listen to rental, but I guess it comes on. I'm not sure when it starts. Maybe somebody can let me know right quick. And might just listen around. I don't know if I'll get on or not, but been a while since I've pulled with CW. And I really need to get back into it. It's something I really enjoyed. With that, I'm going to pass along 73 to everyone. Happy New Year again. And we'll turn it up to Tom. WA3KLR in the net. WA3YNW.
Okay, Bill. WA3YNW. And the AWA net from WA3KLR. Usually I don't have anything to say at the second round, but today I have a lot of notes. And you just said something, Bill, that I did make note of, because I figure I'll just make it first right away, is the sinking of a lot of U-boats. And I think part of that was due to the being able to break the Enigma code. And as I recall, Hitler thought that there was somebody inside his organization that was involved with leaking information, as I recall. Anyhow, let's see here. On a quick break, Bill, WF1L, I guess your 1296 signal would be horizontally polarized. Is that right, Break?
Roger, Roger. It's actually I got a 45 element straight Yagi, where almost everybody else is using loopers. Over, over.
Okay, very, very good. Yeah, I have a scanner here that goes up to 1300 now, but I could probably just detect the carrier. It doesn't do a sideband or that, but that's going to be a vertical, and it's going to have a short cable right out in the disc cone. But maybe I could kludge together a little handheld few element Yagi to stick it out the window sometime in the spring, see what happens. Well, let's see here, Doug. We were talking about the mosquito. Yeah, you mentioned the trailing wire antenna. That would be the ideal thing, and the ideal configuration of a trailing wire is to be a half wave, and so you'd have the end-fed half wave, and that would represent the best radiation if that's your number one priority. And you guys mentioned KB3HT, Steve. I have met him. I organized a brunch at the Shady Maple smorgasbord once or twice a year, and Steve came there once. I met him. That's how I met him. DGB, I guess I've known you enough years, I kind of know you well enough. I was guessing yesterday that you might want a copy of this article. It's probably not available directly on the web, but I'll look for it. And if it's not, I'll scan it in and send it to you. I'll PDF it. It would be 8 pages, PDF into one PDF. And so don't tell anybody about that. That's probably copyright. Doug, the SP600, yeah, a lot of AMers have those, and they all, or that have them, really like those as AM receivers. And Janice, you mentioned two things, the Apache. I just worked a ham friend
couple of days ago, Mike W3SLK. I hadn't talked to him in a long time. We had a long QSO. He was using an Apache that he had repaired. He sounded pretty good. And you mentioned SWLing. I used to do a lot of that with my Drake R7 receiver. And I also did a lot of program listening, it's called, as you mentioned. I used to listen to Radio Canada a lot and the BBC. And I would also just tune through the bands and all the way through, just listening for anything. And I've had some golden captures of over the years, which I won't mention right now. And I used to, back then when I first started using that receiver, I used to receive radio teletype, and I'd look for radio teletype stations and try to copy them. I did some XWLing the other day, and I tuned through, and I was particularly interested in seeing if I could spot a numbers station. A friend of mine had sent me an article on numbers stations, and I found a Spanish speaking numbers, I think it was on 11530 kilohertz about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I came by later, a couple hours later, and it was off the air. And I had a few years of French, but I'm learning a little bit of Spanish now from watching TV. I think I could copy most of the numbers she was saying. Female voice. So, believe it or not, that's everything. That's all I have now. All my notes. And it goes to Jim, NX3Z, the group from WA3KLR.
Okay, very good, Tom. Well, kudos to you for such good note-taking. I did not keep any notes. And I've been looking at this old DX20, trying to figure out how I might interface it. I don't have any. I don't have a good crystal collection. I did build a digital synthesizer CFO for it, but it's kind of kludgy, and the switching of it leaves a lot to be desired. And so deciding what receiver to interface it with and how to TR switch it and all that. And so I don't know. It might be more than I can handle today. Maybe I'll just go with one of the other rigs here and not try to go too nostalgic tonight. And I've got a SP600 here also, the Northern radio version that I got from Howard Mills, and works well, and fun to listen to. It drifts a little bit on 20 meters and up, but it'll settle down after a while. And anyway, it's just a very interesting radio. Of course, you want to have a frequency reader somewhere, because you're not going to be telling anybody what frequency they're on based on that radio. Or, well, you're about 14050, you're five on the logging ring and a little bit past there. Hi. So anyway, I'm going to say 73 to everybody. My daughter's coming over. I got to help her with a little project. And good to hear everybody this morning. Good strong signals from everybody. Bill, your signal was down a little bit, but everybody was Q5 armchair copy, so fun to listen to this net. And thanks for the welcome. So I'll be in here as time allows. And I hope everybody has a safe and enjoyable New Year's this evening. So back up to the top there, Doug. WA3DSP and the blue, the other net I get on all the time is the Blue Ridge Runner net. The Bruce Kelly Memorial net. This is NX3Z.
AB2RA information.
Yeah, go ahead, Janice.
Yeah, NX3B, if you're looking for information on that DX20, if you go to wirelessgirl.com and click on the vintage tab on the left of the screen and then select transmitters, you'll find an article there on the DX20. Now, I compared it to the HX11, which has one of the switches is slightly rewired to provide 110 volts out to a an antenna relay. That's a little bit too much for you to tackle in one day, but there's a good write up there. Maybe that'll help you out eventually getting it integrated into your station. AB2RA, back to net.
Your comment?
Okay, very good. AB2RA and the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net WA3 DSP. And I was reading a little bit more about the mosquito. And apparently there's one that is airworthy that was restored in New Zealand, and it's supposed to be moved, and I don't know how old this is, it may already be there, or maybe something changed, but it was supposed to be moved to the Military Aviation Museum in Virginia Beach, and it's airworthy. It's owned by Jerry Yagen, Y-A-G-E-N. You probably have an opportunity to see one if it's still there, or if it ever made it there to the museum in Virginia Beach. Be very interesting to see. There was another one that was airworthy that crashed at an air show in 1996. Killed the two pilots after a loss of one of the engines, and that was a shame. So there's apparently only one airworthy one, and they're saying there's approximately 30 non-flying mosquitoes around the world, I guess in various museums. So that's kind of interesting. And yeah, shortwave is really a wasteland anymore. So is the AM broadcast band. I don't know if anybody's ever listens to that anymore. I can't believe the number of AM broadcast stations that are on the air. I don't know who listens to that. I mean, do they sell AM radios anymore? Or does anybody even listen to that stuff? I mean, there's just, you know, station after station of mostly conservative, you know, or religious stations that they just espouse all this information, and a lot of it is not true. A lot of it is, very skewed information. And I just wonder why all these stations stay on the air, or how they stay on the air, because, you know, why do the advertisers even advertise on those stations when most people are listening elsewhere? It makes very little sense to me. I think the AM broadcast band and shortwave at this point are just wastelands of garbage information, except for the ham bands and maybe some aircraft and a few other things that go on. But you know, most of the communications now are via the internet or satellite. And have left HF, and a lot of the stations are, just broadcasting whatever. So that's my diatribe on that. The FTD-101X, Janice, sounds very good, very, very pleasing audio, and I certainly don't have any complaints with that. The SP600, I did cut some kind of unique things in that. They use a 5R4 rectifier tube in there, which I think is a little bit of overkill, but they probably did it for reliability reasons. And that tube is a high voltage version of the 5U4. It has wider plate filament spacing, and therefore it also has a much higher voltage loss in the tube, somewhere in the order of 40 to 50 volts of loss of voltage in the tube. So I wanted to solid state the rig, so I took out both the both the 5R4 and the 6AL5 bias rectifiers and put diodes in, and of course I changed out all the electrolytics. But in doing that, of course, that increased the B plus. And what I did is that has two chokes in it, and it's capacitor input. So I eliminated the first capacitor, increased the values of the second and third capacitors considerably, and ended up with choke input. And my line voltage here is about 121 volts. So I used the 5-volt winding that was no longer used for the rectifier to buck the primary, and I ended up with exactly 6.3 volts on the filaments. And the B plus is a little bit less than what it was originally, but I think it was too high originally, to be honest with you. They had about 300 volts on the 6V6, which it's not necessary. So now it's a more reasonable, about 250, 260, somewhere in that area. And I'm very, very happy with that mod, so I'm going to be putting that out on the internet. The other nice thing about the SP600 is there's a lot of taps on the transformer. If you had extremely high or extremely low line voltage, there's taps for that also. And of course, you could buck or boost any of those if you did the rectifier mod. So there's a wide range of adjustments you can make there on voltages. But I was very happy with the end result of changing that out. All right, everybody have a very happy new year, and I will stand by for any late check-ins or comments. WA3DSP.
KLR with comment.
AB2RA with a comment.
Okay, Tom, you pick it up and pass it to Janice, WA3DSP.
Yeah, okay, Doug. I have a few items. Yeah, the mosquito I'm talking about is that one that you're saying is coming to Virginia Beach. That it was restored to flying status from the beginning. That was the goal. By the group in New Zealand, so that's the same plane, and that was about 3 years ago. So there's probably other information on that particular restoration available on the web. What's in this article? They take up. I said it's an 8-page article, but they use 2 pages just for the photo and the title of the article, and there's really about 4 pages of text, so they can't cover too much. Yeah, dude, the FM band, the AM bands are full, and yeah, the AM band's pretty much worthless, except for in our market, we listen to KYW AM news. I do that sometimes on 1060. And there's a station up in Allentown I listen to, and that's about it. I'm still my opinion. There's still a lot of stuff on the shortwave bands. My new Samsung smartphone. I haven't fired it up yet. I'll probably do that later today. It says it's capable of picking up the FM broadcast band, so that's interesting. That always concerned me, that people with their iPods listening to music and their smartphones, that people didn't have pocket radios on them anymore, that picked up AM or FM broadcast, and that concerned me in an emergency.
And, you know, the internet may go down, or cell phones, then what? Something to keep in mind. And so, Doug, you mentioned the satellite and the internet, and we have the autonomous communications. We're still very valuable in an emergency, and we have to keep that in mind. All right, over to Janice, AB2RA from WA3KLR.
Yeah, okay. Doug, I would encourage you to install an inrush limiter. You know, a thermistor, there's a CLR90, I think, that's good for 2 amps. Available from Mauser, and I use it on all of my vintage gear. The problem is that if you solid state the power supply, the B plus comes up first before the filaments, and so there isn't any drain on the B plus. So down the chain of a lot of these dropping resistors and secondary filter condensers, the voltage goes much higher than it normally would, and it can stress components during the power up. And that inrush limiter allows you to protect against that. And I believe that if you needed, because that radio has so many tubes in it, it may exceed the 2 amp rating. I believe you can parallel a pair of these and get a 4 amp rating, which should be more than enough. So I'd encourage anybody that does solid state a power supply. Obviously, you've done your homework and you've got the values of the B plus back to where they belong. Keep that in mind. On AM radio, predictions are that AM radio will disappear within the decade. Because of all of these wireless charging stations that they're going to put in for these all-electric vehicles, will generate so much hash that it's impossible to receive anything. They've charged ahead with this in Europe, and it's been a bit of a mess. And just FYI. Tesla cars, they didn't even bother to put an AM receiver in it because the noise suppression would have been such a challenge. They said to heck with it. That having been said, I really enjoy our local AM station, WHCU, which has a very good 1 hour long local news broadcast, and it's very comprehensive. Our newspaper was bought out by an out of town firm and basically gutted. There's very little local reporting, and you're paying a buck for about 3 sheets of paper, which is pretty ridiculous. But the local news on the radio station, they actually do have reporters that go out, do interviews, and do active news gathering instead of just randomly what comes in. Now, I'll give you that you're right. Most of the rest of the format is things that would appeal to, let's keep it polite and say conservatives. And So, you know, that's what it is. The other station that's affiliated with the same group, it has the same music and format that it did when I was in high school. It's an oldies station. And I love it. It's on in the background while I'm working in the shop if there's nothing interesting coming in over the ham bands. I'll typically play solid state radio. I don't want to run hours on tubes just making background noise. The big problem I think that happened is when the FCC did away with true clear channel AM broadcasting. A lot of people who traveled on the road and over the road truckers could tune in a station in a major city which they were driving towards and probably listen for hundreds and hundreds of miles to news and whatever from that location. And now they've allowed all these little towns to put up directive arrays and lower powered stations, and you can't really get the reception. When I was a kid, I used to listen to KFI in Los Angeles, which was down on 630, I believe, and it came in quite clear here. And that was in downtown Ithaca. Lots of noise there, but it was a good clear signal. Anyway, way too long. Thanks for the net, Doug. AB2RA.
AB2RA and the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net, WA3DSP. Very good, Janice. And, yeah, that was good DXing. But, you know, today, with Sirius XM and also if you had internet capability, which a lot of these truckers have, most of these stations have internet broadcasts, so you could tune in there and copy it anywhere in the world. A lot of the stations stream out on the internet as well as over the air, so that's probably that probably saves a lot of these stations. They get a lot of internet listeners, and they can tell their advertisers that they have more than just the AM broadcast listeners. But it really is a mess. I hope that the noise problem that will plague AM and be its destroy it in the future will not destroy 160 meters and 75 meters also. They're close by, and we may have some serious noise problems in the future with what you're saying. And fine on the inrush, one of the things that, you know, I don't like to use solid state on a capacitive input supply, especially not with some resistance in there to limit the current flow on startup. But in this case, it became a choke input, and the voltages are very reasonable even on startup, so I don't think I really need to put in that that limiter on the SP600. It worked out very well. I was very, very pleased with how that worked out. And most people today, their line voltages are in the low 120 range, maybe 120 to 123. It's typical, and that worked out very, very nice for the SP600. Most of these rigs are spec'd in the 115 to 117 volt area. And if you get into that range, and this is true for the Collins equipment, I've measured quite a bit of it, and if you put in exactly the spec of 115 or 117 or 116, you get exactly 6.3 volts on the filaments. And that's probably your goal right there. to be 6.3 or maybe slightly less on the filaments for longevity. So you really want to, in most cases, buck the primary by 5 or 6 volts, and that works out well when you take out the 5-volt filament and use that as the bucking for the primary. All right, very good. Everybody have a great, happy new year, and hopefully next year will be better than this year has been, at least COVID-wise. And stay safe now, because right now we're in the midst of a big increase in COVID. And hopefully everybody has their vaccine and boosters. 7-3 all, this is WA3DSP shutting down the Bruce Kelly AWA Memorial Net and turning the frequency back to normal amateur use. And I will repeat that I did record today's net, and I'll put that out on the internet later on. 7-3 all.
Doug, quick comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Janice.
Yeah, the inrush limiter that I suggested has a fairly long time constant, and I wasn't concerned because you're using a choke input at that inrush before the other tubes warm up and start drawing current. The voltages at various places down the chain can be much higher than they usually are, and that's why I use the inrush limiter, the CLR90. So I just wanted to clarify that point. It's not the actual choke input versus capacitor input. It's sort of a longer time constant thing, and you'll see the dial lamps and the filaments coming up slowly, and that saves them even at their normal rated voltage. So it's it benefits everything all the way around. AB2RA.
Yeah, okay, very good, Janice. Yeah, I understood that, and I think I measured that, and it wasn't out of range. In fact, the changes that I made actually lowered the B-plus somewhat. They tend to run B-pluses a lot of times a lot higher than they need to be, especially in receivers. And I know the KWM-2 is a prime example of that, because you use the 516F2 power supply, and it switches between transmit and receive, and the B-plus draw is considerably different. So I usually put a regulator in there and regulate the B-plus. That's another option, by the way, that you can use in these rigs, is actually regulate all of the B-plus with a MOSFET. Very easy to do nowadays, and that works out quite well. I've done that also. All right. Have a great year, and we'll talk to you soon. AB2RA, WA3DSP.
Yeah, 73, Doug. AB2RA.